When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I think there's something bigger, though, for us at Nebraska. Like, there was a time when Nebraska football was feared, and we certainly want to get back to that. We want to be a team that you say, you know what, that team's feared. But we're not at that point yet. We're at a point right now where I believe that we have to take back the respect of what it means to play Nebraska and to be Nebraska.
I have one rule for the staff. If you ask them, like, what's this rule about players? Like, if we have an evaluation meeting, well, that's fine. But other than that, don't tell me what a player can do. To tell me what he's refusing to do. Tell me what he's not working at. But don't tell me, well, so-and-so, coaches are notorious. Oh, he can't do this. He can't do that. And that's why, you know, you won't ever hear me do that in the media. You won't ever hear me because I don't need someone coaching my kids that doesn't believe in my kids. So I'm not going to coach your kids and not believe in your kids.
Welcome to the Go Big Redcast, the Husker Fan Sports Show.
Welcome to the Go Big Redcast, Matt's Rule Edition. And really, Mac, it's the Big Ten Media Edition.
Yeah, that's true. It is Big Ten Media Days. And it's warm outside. Super, super warm outside. Rode my bike today. It felt like I was riding into an oven. The entire, like when you open an oven after you make a pizza or something like that, and that whoosh of air. Mm-hmm. It was so hot out. I was going 20 miles an hour. I was like, it's still warm. It was so gross out. So yeah, but Big Ten Media Days, a lot of people talked, a lot of people said some, you know, somewhat interesting things. We'll make more out of it than is probably necessary, but you know, it's that time of year.
Yeah, well, it's Matt's Rule. We're the Matts. I'm Honky.
I'm Matt. Oh, sorry, McGuire.
Mac.
First podcast.
Yeah, well, we're a little rusty. We're off of a few weeks off, about a month off, really. I do have my schmock on here. Mm-hmm. So I've got the Matt Rule schmock going.
You look pretty rural.
Actually, that video or the audio there of Coach Rule at the beginning where he was in the weight room there, that is a Herd At Media release that's going to be coming out tomorrow morning. Cool. Go to Herd At Media, follow them, subscribe to them on YouTube, and you can watch that live. Nice. Damon Benning did an interview with him.
You know
so that should be a good one. What's that?
You know how long it'll be?
I don't know, actually. That's a good question. And let me get this up here. But anyways, subscribe to Herd At Sports there. Also, let's go quickly over a couple of our upcoming shows. And this is going to be one here. There it is. Tommy Frazier.
That guy?
Yeah, nice. That guy. Tommy. We've got him Tommy. Tuesday, August 1st at 7 p.m.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, Rob got us Tommy there. Tommy's going to be going to, let's go up to this one here, the Battle in Boulder. He's going to be at that. Nice. And so I think we're going to talk about the Battle in Boulder. We can talk about his playing days.
He doesn't have any bad memories of Colorado.
No, Colorado is a great place for Tommy to be at.
Yeah. Oh, man. He must relish it. Like no other quarterback almost.
Mm-hmm. And this event here, the Battle in Boulder, that's going to be the Friday night before the Colorado game. So that's up in the mountains somewhere there. I should be able to see this, but I can't.
It's west of here. Ways.
Yeah, it's up there in the mountains. Anyways, and Adam Carricker is coming to it as well. Nice. I was just told that. So we'll learn more about that on Tuesday night when we talk with Tommy. I know Rob's going to give a lot more information on that.
All right.
In addition to that, we've got our Redcast store. You've got the QR code there. Mm-hmm. Click on that. Go get yourself one of these shirts, one of these schmocks, one of these hats, all that good stuff there. Pipeline Jerky. Use Redcast at checkout. Pipeline-jerky.com. Get 10% off and help the offensive line out.
I bought some the other day.
Did it?
For real.
Outstanding. Mm-hmm. Well, you can buy it at Alumni Hall, and that's our last one.
You know what I like about it? It's consistent. And for beef jerky, that's important to me. Sometimes you get that just gristle piece, and it drives you crazy. It's pretty consistent.
It's good. Jerky. Alumni Hall, two Lincoln locations, downtown and South Point Pavilions. All right, Mac. So today. This is the start. It's really the end of the summer, and it becomes the beginning of the fall camp here. Fall camp kicks off on Sunday night.
Yeah.
The team is going to be going to Selick Hall, going to be in the dorms.
That's nice. It'd be nice. It's a It's a great way to kick things off for this new era. I like it a lot. Mm-hmm. And which one's Selleck, though? I don't remember.
If you go just on the north side of the Student Union, there's the green space.
Uh-huh.
And Selleck is just on the east side of that. Oh, so, okay. like when we went to the Fox Big Noon set,
yeah.
It would have been on the right of the, okay. of the set.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's one of the older ones on campus.
Nice.
And pretty cool. I think the team actually used to go to Selleck back in like even the Osborne Devaney days. Man,
the juxtaposition of those dorms to the palace that they're moving into, hopefully sooner than later, but it sounds like it's going to be a little piecemeal. That's kind of a good perspective, like kind of from where the program came and, you know, all the riches he got, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's meant. You know, everything's calculated with Rule. He's probably thinking that.
Brilliant. Anthony Hayek says, I would walk through the fire for Rule. I think there's a lot of fans out there, Anthony, that are thinking the same thing along the lines with you. But today, let's go through some of the videos here today. I'd love to get some of your comments too, Redcasters, as we're going through this. But let's get through some of the videos, and we can kind of discuss one by one. And to start off, we have some from Rule and Trev talking about expectations. And I think this is really good. Let's start with the Coach Rule one here. Right. And he talks about what he wants Nebraska to be known for.
People to respect when they see that white helmet with that red N on it. And so I want our fans to respect us when they pay their money to come watch us play. I want our opponents to respect us. I want all of college football to respect the way that Nebraska plays the game. And most importantly, I want our players to respect what it means to be a Cornhusker and what it means to be at Nebraska. So this season for me is all about us not just earning, but taking back respect and bringing back respect to Nebraska football. And so once you earn respect, then you can talk about being feared. And that's the process we're going to go through.
So, Mac, it's a process. Yes. That's a very Osborne word right there.
Yep.
No one's going to fear Nebraska on day one. We know that. We're coming off of 6 straight losing seasons, 6 bowless seasons. No one's fearing Nebraska. But that is the goal. That's where we want to get back to. We want to be that program that you are feared, and the first step of that is to get respect.
Mm-hmm.
I respect what Coach Rule is trying to do right now.
Right.
I believe in what he's trying to do. I think he's trying to bring Nebraska back through an old school style of play that I think elicits fear.
Mm.
If done well, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, when you would play, a Michigan team or a Wisconsin team, you know, a hard hitting team, that puts a little fear in you. Oh my gosh, these guys can run on you kind of thing. That's different than Ohio State. Not that Ohio State doesn't make you fear, but they just have an incredible talent.
They fear you're scared they're going to run the score up on you.
Yeah,
you
and know, not necessarily they just have amazing talent. But yeah, like when you played Wisconsin and they could just pound you and pound you, which basically what did Wisconsin do? They took Nebraska's style.
Which
of play.
One's more emasculating? Just getting the ball ran down your throat without any hope of stopping it, or just getting boat raced because the team you're playing is so fast? I don't know. I feel like the beating is worse.
I mean, I think the beating is worse because if two teams were, you have Ohio State of like 2016, the team that beat us 62-3 when we were ranked in the top 10 still. Okay. And that team was wildly talented,
mm-hmm.
but that team goes and plays the 95 Huskers.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they're more talented than the 95 Huskers. I don't know. That gets into a talent discussion, right? But we know the style of play that the 95 team can do. Style of play can undo some of the talent advantages the opponent had. 94 Colorado might have been more talented than us. Mm. 94 Miami may have been more talented than us. But when you just wear them down, when you beat them down, style means something. And I want us to get back to that style. Coach Rule talked a couple times today, and he's talked the last offseason about playing that style of football, beating people up and getting, you know, it's not going to happen in the court. First quarter is going to happen in the second and third, and by the fourth, we want to win it. The fourth quarter hasn't been friendly to us the last few years.
No. You know, you brought up an interesting point. Sometimes I think, you know, you talk about the style and the, but as good as Osborne's teams were, they really only had that peak there later in the, or, you know, at the beginning of the 90s and through the mid part. But, you know, you say, was this team more talented? I feel like sometimes we just say that because we ran option ball or we didn't throw the ball a lot or something like that. Or our defense didn't, you know, we had those 90s rules where you could really hurt people or something like that. I don't know. Maybe we underestimate how good those athletes really were.
Well, so
I think sometimes when we look back, we think, I shouldn't do this. I shouldn't say people think that way. Maybe But I wonder if sometimes that gets lost in the conversation. It's like, no, I think those guys were really good.
I think we had a lot of talent. We had an offense that didn't lend itself to sending a lot of guys to the pros.
Agreed.
Respective 100%. To how good we were.
Especially skill position.
We barely would send a wide receiver ever. We'd be,
wide receiver, quarterback.
Yeah, and tight ends, quarterbacks, we weren't sending a lot of those guys there. And because we weren't a big passing attack, we didn't have the tackles. The left tackle that would always be the number one guy in the draft. We rarely ever had that, even though we'd have Outland winner after Outland winner.
Plus, we
had
the NFL style change too, right? Yep. Like when the NFL was more run heavy there for a while, then they kind of phased in more of a passing game, which kind of, I suppose. It's so funny how it all comes back around. And now the new, almost in vogue thing is to huddle.
Yeah.
Wasn't that a quick trend?
But to get a fullback back on the field, to huddle, to get under center.
And at the same time, we're doing this. Wisconsin's like, let's speed it up. You know, let's go. We're going to spray it around the yard.
Did you see Braylon Allen today, the running back, was asked that. I think he was on 93.7 The Ticket, and he was talking about their offense coming in, spreading it out now, and how he'll probably get less touches, but he likes it because there'll be less guys in the box. And
makes sense.
And you can spin anything any way you want. I would argue that that wasn't an issue for Wisconsin the last few years to warrant making an entire flip of everything. But you know what? That's what they've done. They've sold out on that. I would say they're making similar style whole house changes offensively to what we would have done back in 03 to 04, going from Solich to Callahan.
It's a better comparison to talk about Solich to Callahan than it is to say Frost from Rule. You know what I mean? Because Wisconsin did have a good thing going. You know, they were doing okay. You know, even their middling years that they've had, maybe the last, I don't know, they're still pretty good. They're a formidable
team. They won at a 70% clip under Chris. So
that seems pretty good.
It seems like we've seen
but
this
I understand
before.
The thought, too. It's like, okay, but everybody's getting better. We're bringing in USC. We're bringing in UCLA. We're probably going to end up bringing in Oregon or somebody like that. We got to.
If you're a Badger fan, you don't want to gravitate to mediocrity. That's for sure.
Yeah, don't even say those words. Actually, say those words.
Say those words. Well, let's keep talking about expectations. And all offseason, we've mentioned how Trev and Rule are kind of on the same page with things. And Trev was asked the same question about some expectations. Here's his answer.
I'm serious about what we talked about last couple of years. You know, it doesn't take many Nebraska fans and our alumni and all of you to look at a team and say, is that a Nebraska team? Is that a team that pays attention to details? Is that a team that's physical and tough and fundamentally sound and plays as a unit, has discipline and accountability in the program? To me, those are the small fundamental things that lead to what we all desire.
The small fundamental things, Mac, we've talked about all offseason, the details, what used to be called little things, which sometimes got misrepresented as turnovers. as penalties, as special teams. Well, those aren't little things. No. Those are pretty important details of football. And when you don't do them well, you're going to lose a lot of games a lot of different ways. And I think
usually close and usually late.
Well, if you're not a terrible team, you'll be close.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
If you're a bad team and you have bad details, you'll get blown out every time.
Yeah.
But somehow miraculously, Nebraska could keep within at least single digits of most opponents over the last 4 or 5 years, but find every way to lose. And the things that Coach Rule and Trev are talking about there, from the details to being good in the fourth quarter and conditioning themselves to the fourth quarter, wearing opponents down, all that, that's a philosophy that we know works. We know it certainly works here, and we've seen it work against us.
Would you say the most what would be the most troubling sign that some important things haven't changed? If we're turning the ball over more, or if we're unable to establish a run game, or the dumb penalties, like which one would be the most alarming to you?
I guess right away you see what happened in the spring game and that we had the 6-7 fumbles. Now, I wasn't alarmed by that solely because the vast majority of the people that were doing those fumbles weren't guys that were going to be playing major roles this year. I mean, when, Torres, fumbled the one handoff when he hit the fullback, and the ball goes on the ground. I'm like, well, that sucks to watch, but I know Torres isn't going to be the guy taking snaps. Now he's not on the team. I think kind of along your point here, we have a question from Coach Steam, and it's what makes you more confident in what Rule is saying this offseason compared to what we have heard from prior regimes or didn't hear, depending on their approach to opening statements at media days. That's a good point to the fact that this was the best opening statement I've heard in years from a Nebraska coach. Because
I was actually a little underwhelmed with the opening statement, if I'm being honest. And I kind of appreciated that he didn't go off. Like, I really did. I like the fact everyone was sort of expecting this grand sort of like top down, you know, like unveiling of the program type deal because he's such a good orator. He kind of just kept it real simple, which spoke to what he actually said. Got to be humble right now. Mm-hmm. We're nothing to talk about yet. We got to win. We got to earn. So he took questions.
But what makes you? But what makes you more confident? I guess to the coach's question.
What makes me more confident?
What makes you more confident that and what Rule is saying this offseason? I'll give you mine. Rule has said some things on day one, and he's followed up with them the whole offseason. So I mean, there's already precedence here. When he said, "I want to have physical practices," and you go out there in mm-hmm. spring ball, and you're seeing guys getting hit. You're seeing quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. Basically, they wore the green jerseys, but they might as well have taken them off because they were getting hit
right in
practice. When they say, "Hey, we want to go back and really reinvest in state," and they brought in over 3,000 kids so far this year, so far in camps, you know, there are tangible things to show that what he said he wants to do, he's doing. I'd be shocked at some point, you know, if he just kind of pulls the rug out from under us and goes, "Oh, just kidding."
Well, okay.
And we go into a 5-wide spread and don't huddle.
If I'm playing devil's advocate, though.
Sure.
When Frost first came back, for one, he had a finger on the pulse of what we felt like. Like, as far as how Husker Nation felt, we felt like we were gypped by this old-ass coach that should have never been our coach. He made us a laughingstock. We knew the team was weak because they looked weak at the end. Frost comes in with the whole, "This is some bullshit going on. Don't worry, we're lifting now." Sends out a bunch of videos. The guys are getting bigger. The guys are getting stronger. So he was, to that extent, he went and got Nick Henrick and Hickman, you know, guys that weren't supposed to go. He did some of this. So to what Mike, I'm sorry, who was that? No.
Coach Steam.
To what he's talking about, he's 100% right. You can find the true lines throughout it. I guess some of the things I've liked that's actually different, is less rhetoric, is I haven't seen a single weight room video. Have you?
Very few, if any, yes.
I mean, it's usually – I haven't seen that many videos at
all. I mean,
all.
What he said, you know, a few months ago, what Coach Rule said was, you know, we'll do hype videos just like any school, but our hype videos, it's not going to be talk. You're going to see us work. That was his big thing.
Well, and I like that.
Yeah.
And that could just be me being reactionary because I want the opposite of Frost right now. I want the opposite of losing.
What Frost showed was a lot of inexperience at the position. And unfortunately, I mean, we all, through just wanting him so badly to have that success, we probably turned a blind eye to a few things, but look, I mean, the way he ran the program lent itself to not being the best team in the fourth quarter. When you're not tackling in practice for 4 years, your defense isn't going to tackle well. When you're not having the physical practices there, you know, all those things. And we continued to run into the same issues with turnovers, penalties, the details. Now, Coach Rule has a much longer track record of those details. And that's how he can't rebuild two programs if he doesn't, you know, subscribe to that. So again, anything can happen. But my hope is that he sticks with what's worked the last few games.
Oh yeah. Counterpoint. I already played devil's advocate. Although I had one. It was such a good smoke show with Frost. It really was. Like, there was no reason to think he wasn't doing. But I guess what I'm saying is, maybe Frost did think he knew how to do it all. But I think the vast majority of us fans truly underestimate what that job entails. Like, especially in a monster program like what Nebraska is. So it could be somewhat foolish to assume a guy could go from the American to the Big Ten and just bring it all with him, you know, and have that. So some of that was blinders on. He had that amazing season. It totally makes sense. Everything tracks. Nobody should feel bad about it. But that's not Rule's resume. He's already got the Power Five under his belt. He's already done the rebuild twice in one under some, you know, awful circumstances. So that part, and it's a pretty consistent message.
Well, let's do something here. Let's move around our numbers here, our videos.
Let's do it.
And I think another thing that differentiates Coach Rule right now, where he's at before he's even coached a game here, And let's compare him to Coach Frost at the exact same moment. Let's try to keep it apples to apples. Let's go to our clip number seven on the offense.
Johnny, can you play clip number seven?
QB run game. Let's go do this.
You know, over the years, I've really thought a lot about that. You know, I've probably come a little more for a full circle on it. I don't know if you can run. I think if you're running him to get 3 yards and get tackled by seven people, you know, repetitively is probably not the right thing. I think if you can create explosive plays, if situationally on, you know, third downs, you can convert third and fourth downs, you can score touchdowns in the red zone. The thing with Jeff, the thing with Heinrich, the thing with Chuba, they're all 4-4, 4-5, 4-6 guys. I don't want to rob them of what makes them great. And for Jeff, it might just be dropping back to pass and tucking it and taking off. It might just be those unscripted runs that make him great. But, you know, I see the young man from Florida, his name is Casey Richardson, you know, who come to the Colts. And a lot of it based upon his athletic ability. So we're going to try to turn those guys loose. We don't want to be silly with it and have them getting, you know, like I said, just running up the middle and getting 3-4 yards 10 times and getting beat up. But if we can make some plays with them, we will.
Now, the reason I played that right now, I was going to wait and show that a little later, but in respect to the talk of where Frost was at this point and where Rhule is, and why do I have more confidence in Rhule? Think of that first offseason with Frost. He kind of runs off O'Brien. As we all know, Joe Burrow did not come here. and he goes into that offseason so confident with just Jebbia and a brand new freshman QB, Adrian Martinez, as opposed to what Coach Rhule is talking about here with his three quarterbacks who have all been playing Division I football now for multiple seasons. Two of them have been starters at different schools. Purdy has started at Florida State for a game. He started at Nebraska last year, obviously, what Jeff Sims brings in. And then what Heinrich brings is that they have three guys Harbert brings. They have all similar skill sets there.
Pretty similar.
And I think that just that room alone, because you know going into the season, you can't just have one guy. No. Now, I saw a question here, and it was from Andrew, and it was, I guess, along these lines. Hey there, what do you think of Sims being the starting quarterback? For me, I'm ecstatic with it. I love that style of quarterback. I know there are questions that people are going to have about completion percentages coming from Georgia Tech. Totally fair. He has to prove that. I think Satterfield and Rhule are ecstatic to have him. They love his – I was just watching some of his highlights today, and highlights are just that, highlights.
They're amazing. Yep.
But at Georgia Tech, when you look at the highlights of him, arm strength is not a question.
Nope.
He has an NFL body size-wise.
Oh, yeah.
And I would say that I think he is – above average at worst as a runner. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Is he an elite runner? Like we used to say Adrian was an elite runner. I don't know. Okay, I don't know enough about Sims yet. From the highlights
that I have seen, I haven't seen elite. That could change. I just haven't seen. If there's running highlights I've missed, then perhaps. But
it's going to feel like a huge step up from Casey as a runner.
Oh, yeah. No question. He's not quite Adrian, but he's way ahead, I would say, of Casey.
All right. What's that? looking at the questions here. What's Coach Steam saying here? One thing we've learned over decades is Nebraska is not an ideal place to learn to be a head coach in college. And I would say that that's absolutely correct. I mean, that is the thing that we wanted so badly for Frost to be that guy right away. We wanted him to have 3, 4, 5 more years of experience. He doesn't. That's what I think Coach Rhule. And he showed it today again, one more time. Didn't surprise me with anything, but he just handles himself so well in these media. Any opportunity he has, he just is such a good ambassador of the program.
Yeah, he is amazing at throwing strikes. You know, he just constantly says just about the right thing. You know. I hate keep doing this comparison thing. Maybe one more time. But Frost was prickly. And sometimes having a prickly coach, that's endearing if you're winning a lot, but you got to win a lot to be a prickly coach in my book. Like I'd rather have more of but Riley was too far the other way.
Oh yeah.
Where it's like, I'm not even mad when we lose.
Yeah. The snow cones at practice. No.
Yeah.
Bo was perfect for 2008. 2008 was a season where he comes in.
He's a man of the times.
Well, he came in 2008 and red shirts a bunch of guys, and we have a chip on our shoulder against everybody, and we go out and go 9-4 against kind of all odds. No one was expecting that right away in year one, beat Clemson at the end of the season. Yeah. And it was kind of that perfect mentality for what that team needed at that moment. But you can't.
Bo had some good bowl wins.
But you can't continue that presence. You can't be against the world year after year after year after year. That wears on people at some point. The whole world being against you. It's not. Not everyone's against Nebraska here. We just need to play better.
If his AD would have been less of a prick, Bo could have relaxed and maybe been a little bit cooler.
Well, his AD was Osborne for the first 4 years.
Well,
it was really only the last couple years.
Don't you feel like he was less of a prick, though, when Osborne was here? I mean, he wasn't overly pleasant. Bo's Bo, but I felt like towards the end, he was just like, you can't hardly say anything to this guy.
Well, it got worse by the end. Well, there's no doubt about that.
Maybe, I don't know.
And I think that's part
going
of
down memory lane.
Well, this is part of why we showed Rule and Trev right at the beginning talking about expectations together, is because you want to have some kind of synergy between these two.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we talked about how good Rule was in this setting today, and he was. But if you went back 10 years ago and it's Bo and Ikorst showing up to the same event, Bo's not going to be as good as Rule, but Ikorst isn't going to be as good as Trev either. And they're certainly not going to be on the same page talking about things.
I will say, though, Bo was always really good with national media.
Yeah. I just like that they've got the same message going out there. I think that's important.
No question.
Ryan says that my main worry is the line's holding up. The O-line problems have held us back so much, and who knows what we have on the D-line. I'll say right now with the O-line, just them bringing Piper, and I was reading, somebody today said if Piper went to this, you know, he's probably a starter. I'm not ready to jump to that and say that Piper's a starter, but I definitely think that this means they think highly of him if they bring him to the coaches or to the Big Ten media days. You know, I think between Nuuli and probably Corcoran, at guards, and you've got Scott, and then you've got Ben Hart, and you've got Prochazka, and then you throw in Piper on top of that, Lutovsky. I mean, we've got some guys. I think we could have a legit 6-7 man rotation, and there's some experience. In fact, that's one of the things. I'll go back to this video here where Rule is giving his thoughts on the teams. He talks right away about the experience of the O-line.
You know, we have some veteran players on the offensive line and a tight end that I'm excited about. You know, we've got a really good running back room. Excited about Jeff Sims, who I brought here, as well as Heinrich and Chuba. I think anytime you have a quarterback that you believe in, and we have three that we believe in, you're going to have a chance to win. So, to me, it's less about like the actual team itself and more about us getting into the fourth quarter of games and making the plays that maybe we haven't made the last couple of years. And so that's everything from conditioning to the way that we practice to preparing them for those situations and then hoping that it manifests itself on game day.
So we have experience on the O-line. The D-line, I am a little more concerned about. Now, we posted a thing to Twitter today saying that at least on the interior D-line, we're not talking about the outside guys, Gunnarsson and those dudes, the DNs, but on the interior side, feel pretty decent about Nash, feel pretty decent about Robinson, feel pretty decent about Elijah Judy. Really want to see a fourth guy step up there. Yeah. And Raquan Buckley is the guy that, you know, 6'6", 290, he's going into his third year in the program.
Yeah.
That's a guy that, you know, we right off the bat, if that's our fourth guy in the rotation, and if he brings the same kind of development that Coach Knighton talked about this week on the radio there about him, I mean, I think that guy, he could have a breakout season for our number four D tackle. Let's put it that way, you know. Just getting on the field, playing 20 snaps a game would be great season.
Yeah, the difference those guys make is probably hard to really point to, but they do make a difference. You know, they spell a guy a little bit and let him stay fresh for later in the games, and maybe he makes a play, but when I think about the lines, both lines, here's how I do my mental gymnastics for this one. So what I do is I think about how stiff really both lines were last year. It was a constant complaint, and I'm not the only one. A lot of people brought that up. And I heard even Rule today talking about how he's seeing more bend in those boys than he has in a while. So you take that, you add flexibility to big men, and then a little more with flexibility comes more speed, more explosiveness. And you have 2 years of coaching by the same offensive line, presumably with an offensive coordinator that is going to help him out, call plays for the offensive line. And you're going to focus on a run game and you've got your commitment to it. All of that goes into the recipe of whether or not you have a good line or not. So it's, and most of those ingredients are kind of hard to know. I don't know, but I do know coming out of high school, a lot of these guys were regarded as pretty good athletes that could play Division I Power 5 football. And they're still on the team and they've been on the team for a while now. So I don't know. And if they're okay, if they're a little bit better, they don't even have to be that much better. No, be better. Be a lot better.
Well, that's be better is part of development.
For sure.
And that's been a knock on the last 4 or 5 years is the lack of development that certain players saw over the course of their three, four seasons.
Certain fans.
Well, when I think of someone like Ben Hart, to your point, he was one of those top 150, high school All-American guys, played in the Army All-American game from Minnesota, picked Nebraska over other Big Ten West schools, over other national schools, right? He was a big-time recruit and just hasn't really had that big season yet, or he's always been a liability at times. Yep. You see him right now, he's lost good weight, it looks like. He looks like he's at his slimmest, even though he's still the same weight. He's still like 330 pounds at 6'9". It's amazing how you can hide that. But that, that quickness might be the thing that helps him not get beat around the edge. And having him coming back here and being a player for us, okay? I mean, he needs to lock down that right tackle spot because then you have all kinds of flexibility again with Corcoran. Same thing we said a year ago. Prochazka on the left. We know what Prochazka can do. He needs to stay healthy.
Well, we don't know what he can do, but...
Well, we know what he can do if he can stay healthy. But he hasn't been able to stay healthy. Or at least we know what he is projected to do. How about that?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason why Michigan was hot after coming out of high.
He's a prospect.
He's another one of those top 100 kind of guys. And then, what I'd really like to see with a guy like Corcoran is just to be able to really solidify a spot. I feel like Corcoran's been kind of this piecemeal. They've thrown him at guard. He goes out to left tackle. He goes to right tackle when someone's hurt. He probably play backup center. And at some point, guy, you got to play a spot.
Yeah, it'd be nice for him to find a home. But even if he can't, if he's a hell of a backup to come in and spell if he can play all the spots.
You need 6-7 guys on the line for sure that can play every game, not just for injury purposes. You need to spell dudes. You need to have a swing guard and a swing tackle.
I struggle to project how this team is going to be when I feel like the teaching, the development, the coaching, the change in philosophy can really make a big impact on what I didn't view as horrible players, and we've added a few good players. Yeah. What if Jeff Sims is okay? What if we got it? What is he, 6'4"?
We've said 230? We've said it from day one of this offseason was that a developmental program, which is what Coach Rule said he wanted to be from the start, a developmental program in 2023 looks like what this offseason has been. Mm. If you're going to bring guys in from the portal, you're going to bring them in January, and they're going to be here the whole dang time. For sure. We've had one transfer, as far as I can remember. Correct me if I'm wrong here. We've had one transfer in post spring, and that was that Knack kid, the offensive tackle from Utah.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So most of the guys, anybody that we're going to be counting on, there's no O'Shawn Mathises in this group of guys that just got here, or Devin Drews that are going to get here in August, or
Stephen's kind of said something about. Well, we'll see
that somebody could come in this late. Yeah. Still,
well. He was talking about, his recruiting class and how well it's going. And people were saying, oh, yeah, but you got to keep him coming. He's like, well, yeah, I know. We got to keep. But, we're going to go after some guys, too.
I'm just talking about guys that are going to be playing when we play against Minnesota. I'm saying those guys are guys that have been here since January.
Oh, I'm with you.
Yeah, we're not playing guys that are just getting here kind of thing. And I think that's important there. Eric here says, my hope with Rule's reputation as a developer is that our fall off between the ones down to the twos and threes isn't a surmountable gap when injuries do happen. And that's absolutely true. And I also think part of that, Eric, is that the team that we see play against Minnesota in late August needs to be a different team than the one we see play against Iowa on Black Friday. Like that development, that you've got to be a much better team. You've got to see players develop over the course of a season because there's going to be an injury and there could be game one, there can be a gap between player number one and player number two, but by game four and then by game eight, that gap has to be lessened. These guys, that gets back to practice. And I want to play a video here of Coach Rule talking about practice today and talking about kind of doing some of the things that what we were doing under the Osborne and Devaney and all that with stations, making sure that a lot of guys are getting out there. So here's a practice.
We have a little bit larger roster than I've had at other places I've been. And so really practicing in the ways that Coach Devaney, Coach Osborne, Coach Solich did for 42 years of really dominance, having multiple stations, multiple drills going on, a lot like we practiced at Penn State. But I hadn't done that for many years, and getting back to it this spring has been really good for us. So I think that's maybe not about the Big Ten. It's just more about being at Nebraska, I'd be a fool if I didn't ask Coach Osborne what the blueprint is. And he's been, he doesn't talk about plays. He talks about the way they practice first and foremost.
the blueprint of Nebraska football. It's not about plays. And look at me. I'm a huge option guy, right? I've always been an option guy.
You love
the option.
You love the fullback.
The option isn't Nebraska football. And plays aren't Nebraska football. It's being a physical style. It's how you practice. It's the philosophy of being a four-quarter team, playing smart football, not beating yourself. I've listened to Osborne over the years give different talks about the goals that they would set from week to week, and the goal was never to beat the opponent. You never – that wasn't the goal. The goal was – you know, in preseason, we love to get into these – what is – what's their score – or what's your record going to be? Are you going to go 9-3 or 10-2 or whatever? Osborne wasn't about you know, what's the record going to be. You set goals – achievable goals, but high standing goals of, hey, we want to get this many yards per carry. We want to have this. We want to win the turnover battle by this amount. We want to have
net punting,
field position. And if we do these things, if we reach these goals, 9 times out of 10, or maybe in his case, I guess 255 times out of 25 years, you're going to win games if you can reach those goals. And if you don't, then you literally can clap as the team goes by because God bless them.
Very nice.
You know, and you know, if they can beat you while you still reach those goals. And so the goals that I think Coach Rule's talking about here and wanting to do, he talks about the day by day and the details matter. I do have a video with that too, but it's the fact that we've got to get better every single day. We're not good enough right now to be talking about, you know, going 10-2 or 9-3.
Well, yeah, that's almost why I don't worry about the backups being that big of a drop off. Let's worry about our starters first. You know, I don't even know.
That's true.
Some of these young guys might be pretty good. You know, we'll see. I think we're going to see a lot of guys play, and I hope we do. I mean, that seems to make the most sense. Let's see what we got on the roster. I just want to see us play well, you know. And just like Rule said, we know what well looks like. You know, we know what fundamental football looks like. You know what when a team isn't beating itself. And I could go for a season of that.
Well, we know what it looks like to be up 10-0 on Minnesota at halftime. We did that last year.
Yeah.
We also know what it looks like to give up a second half lead and lose.
Yeah.
And those are the things that right away, as you go to August 30th or 31st and week one, is that can we get ahead of Minnesota? Of course we can. Do you have any doubts that this team can get a lead on them? I think we can get a lead on Minnesota. Yes, I absolutely do. Based off of recency bias, you know, we can get a lead on Minnesota. Can we keep a lead on them? That's the thing that's the details. Can we get it beat out of the kids? Essentially, you know, that whatever the bad voodoo was, whatever
isn't
it was.
Funny, isn't it funny how people assume that the previous coaching staff lingers with the program, like the turnovers would only go away if this coaching staff would go away, you know, or is it the players? Or, you know, like, it's just kind of funny how we just, the coaching staff does get fired, but this team has a problem with turnovers. Well, why? That coach is gone. This is a totally different team.
It's
a totally different team. You know, this guy's had an issue with, well, he did then. Well, you know, to me, it's like, what matters more? What do you got there?
We got Ken McCone saying GBR boys take back respect. And there we go. Can I turn that the right way? Generation Red Podcast. There you go, Ken. Fellow Herdat Media Pod. Nice. Love you guys.
Nice way to network. That was nice. Seamless.
It's so funny when you're looking like in reverse here, like in the mirror essentially at ourselves, trying to get things turned like the right way. Or if I go like this or this, everything's kind of backwards. I
honestly hadn't noticed until you said that.
Well, here, try to hold this up. Try to hold that up and see if you can figure out the right way.
Oh, I see what you mean. Nailed it.
Got it right away. Wonderful. This is great for great for the podcast people tomorrow listening to that. That makes for great.
They'll wonder what we were holding.
Yeah. So, anyways, all right. Let's get back to. Let's go to some of the culture building stuff that Rule was talking about. And there's been some things, anybody that's been paying attention to Big Ten football the last couple of weeks, obviously Northwestern, since the last time we did a red cast, Northwestern has a different coach now. Since the last time we did a red cast, even Minnesota has had some, you know, at least embarrassing things come out about them with Fleck. But I will say, I don't think much is going to come out of the Fleck thing unless there's more information that we haven't heard. All it was it just really sounds like he's a weirdo, which was nothing new.
Yeah, that's
there's some weird thing. You know, if he got in any trouble, there might be something with his you know,
his Schrute bucks,
it's like so letting guys,
he made a deposit,
letting guys
in the Fleck bank, but you didn't have enough credit, and now you got to row your boat downstream. I mean, I can just imagine this. He's such my nephew Ryan loves PJ Fleck, and I got to give the guy credit. He's put together a pretty good program in Minnesota. Honestly, he's done a good job, but the dude is insufferable. It's just. His suits are so tight, too. Anyway.
Well, since the last time we've done a podcast, there's been some, at least controversy with a couple of our Big Ten West bros. And so I think Coach Rhule, he brought up a really good statement here this morning, and this was on a Chris Schmidt, Hale Varsity Radio.
Schmidt,
their show this morning. And he made a great statement about the way that you live your life every day that, you know, you could show it on ESPN. Watch
all
this.
All he does. He's dropped dimes. That's all he does.
You know, this is my 11th year being a head coach. I've been blessed. I've always taken the approach of making sure that everything that we do every single day, like if it was being aired on ESPN, that, you know, I'd be okay with that. We're here for a very simple purpose, and that's to help improve the lives of young people.
So the things you're doing every day, you know, that could be shown on ESPN. Mm-hmm. And this is where I will just throw shade at PJ. There's nothing illegal about this, but at the very least, if you are forcing your team to have to clap when you walk into a room, yeah, you know, it's a very, that feels a lot like the things that we were throwing.
I like it. You
know.
I thought Rhule was going to say, I'm here for two things, drinking beer and kicking ass. And I'm damn near out of beer. I thought I was going to be so excited for that, but that's all right. Next time. Yeah. Fleck is like a little, do you think people carry him around on like a little chair and like he walks down their back into the meeting room? All pepped up on three Red Bulls. I like him.
Well, so I want to go back to what I said a little earlier. Rhule talked about the day-by-day, the details. Mm-hmm. This is part of culture building, and I know that gets tiring for some people to hear, but I do think, especially in year one, this is important. I don't think that we need to hear this from Coach Rhule 2 years from now, 3 years from now. Obviously, by then, the culture is established.
That would be my favorite word to go away. I hate culture word. It's just gross.
I think in year one,
I know.
And he's not even saying it. So
I know. This is just a personal, like, I'm sick of swagger and culture.
I'm using the word culture to be descriptive of what he's talking about. And so
please don't take offense to what I'm saying.
So day by day.
What I love about Nebraska is it's literally written on the side of the stadium day by day. Like, that's the key. Like, so we talk about 42 years. It wasn't that we ran the ball, ran option, or played this defense. It was this mindset from Coach Osborne, from Coach Devaney, from Coach Solich. Like, every little detail matters every single day.
Every little detail matters, Mac. Every day. And when you let the details slip, that's when you lose games in the fourth quarter and kick onsides for no reason.
You know, one thing that kind of struck me when he's incorporated that day by day thing. And we all know that was also one of Frost's slogans as well, like the same thing, but I love the fact that he kept it anyway. You know, it is on the stadium, you know, that's like, he didn't run away. He didn't try to make up a new kind of, nobody wants to do this stupid chant you're making us do thing. It was like day by day. It still works.
Yeah. It wasn't a Frost chant.
No.
It's a Nebraska chant.
Right. But he had the wisdom to understand, like, listen, I don't have to do, and he doesn't divorce himself from Frost really at all. He embraces his players, I feel like.
Yeah.
I feel like he's done a really good job of making sure everybody feels welcome. And so it's just another little, you know, indication that this guy is kind of sounds so stupid, but he's an adult. You know, he's running things. You know, he understands how things work. And if a slogan, I know people love that slogan-ier thing, it's too PJ Flecky, but some slogans work, and day by day is a good one. And you can hear it echoed when you hear the players talk. They say the same thing. So brainwash complete. Good job. It's not just for Colts. It works on football players too.
So. Trev was asked about defense. Let's transition to defense a little bit here. And again, this is with Chris Schmidt and Hale Varsity Radio this morning. Mm-hmm. I've thought about this. So when Schmidt asked the question, I thought it was really interesting how he asked it. He kind of correlated, what are we doing on defense right now? Moving to this 3-3-5, is it anything similar to what we would have done 30 years ago, switching from a 5-2 to a 4-3?
And he's 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Barf.
And he's asking that, of course, to Trev Alberts, who benefited from that change, going from a stand-up outside linebacker in a 5-2 to a hand-in-the-turf 4-3 D end.
possibly the greatest change of any player ever. Like that, talk about.
Well, and that's a change that we're seeing right now with some moving could some
Reimer
guys.
Have a
well, or could Blaze Gunnarsson? Or there's guys that you're moving around. Jabari Butler. That there are guys that are going to get opportunities this year, and opportunities maybe playing some positions that just allows us to play with a little more speed. And so this was Trev's answer to that.
The way I look at this defense, I think it's not too dissimilar in the sense that it's a pressure defense. It's getting turnovers. It's creating some havoc. It's trying to, you know, I think one of the things that Coach McBride did, you know, a really good job of, while we had a base defense, he had a lot of variations where it was difficult for the offense to know exactly who was who and where they were coming from. And so that gave us some opportunity to do some pressures in third and long situations. Still had to stop the run first to get into those situations. But I see that as part of what Tony wants to do as well.
You know, Anthony Hayek says here, Reimer seems real excited about this new defense. I mean, they all do.
Yep.
It sounds like there's going to be opportunities for guys to get on the field. There's going to be opportunities for guys to make plays. They're going to be aggressive. Trev talked about not making, you know, not doing the paralysis by analysis, not making things so complicated that would be sometimes a thing I think that hurt some of Bo's defenses at times. Or there are defenses that we've had in the past where there's been so many checks and so many things that you end up slowing guys down in the process. And if this is working the way that we're being told, I mean, these guys should be flying around, making a lot of plays. I think, you know, Reimer said that it should be a party at the tackle, you know, that we should have, you know, a bunch of dudes there, you know, and that's the mentality. We'll see.
I mean, you got to have the mentality. I will say there's been like no question of buy-in. You don't hear that term thrown around at all. Like,
yeah,
everybody's bought in. And like Reimer's a perfect example. Rules talked about this. You know, sometimes it's easy for the walk-ons or the second teamers to have complete buy-in because they haven't had any success and they think this is a new opportunity. But when you have players like Reimer, who is, if he has a good season, set to be, what, second all-time leading tackler in Nebraska?
If he has like 100 tackles, he'll be second.
So for him to be that bought in and him to say, let's go, that just shows how good the culture is getting there. Environment. I'm going to say environment. The climate. Yeah. No. But I do. The messaging is pretty clear, and we've talked about it before. But from the top down, the messaging is pretty clear, and it's a bright message. It's not so much us against you guys. You know, it's more like we're going to honor you guys on the field by playing like the best Nebraska football should be played. It's not like we're going to be damned what you write about us or not. We're going to play. And like, okay, dude, hey, I want you to win. You know, I'm like, I'm rooting for you here. You know, and that's what we want. We just want you to, you know, look good on the field like you practiced and stuff. You know, that's all we really want. Trev nailed it. Like when he mentioned what a Nebraska fan really wants to look at a football team, I'm begging for that. I don't know what that comes out to in a win-loss, but I know it's going to be better than four wins. I know that. It's impossible for it to be less if we're playing good football. We're a good enough team. If we're playing good football, we're going to be a handful, I think, for damn near everybody on our schedule. I really think that, if we're playing good football.
Rule was asked about recruiting. So this kind of transitions us kind of to the end of it. And he was talked about recruiting, talked about in-state and the success that we've had with in-state kids. I thought this was a really good answer that he gave.
I was out of work when I took this job, right? So I had some time. And so in between, like, you know, driving my kids to school and pickups and all that, I spent a lot of time looking at recruits. And Evan Cooper, who's on my staff, who's you know, really been my recruiting guy, right-hand guy all along, we watched not just the kids that were committed to Nebraska. We watched the 2023 class that was still out there. We watched the 2024s, the 2025s. And what I saw was, you know what? There's a lot of talent in Nebraska. And even this year, you know, like we had 3,000 kids come through our camps. Like we wanted to reinvigorate the camps. So everyone from third grade all the way up through seniors in high school. And guys came to our camps, you know, from small towns all across the state that maybe weren't on our radar, but they certainly are now. And so that was all intentional. And that was part of the reason why we took the job, because if you're strong at home, if there's talent coming from Nebraska, then you're going to win.
What I love about that right there is I like how he started talking about it. He started talking about how when he first looked at this job, not even took it, it goes back to the 2 month coaching search. And I think if anything, if we're going to have success under him, and especially in any early kind of success, that 70 day search where he had every opportunity to look at this program, to not take it, to study every ounce of this. I mean, he took this job running. And I think so much of that was because of those first 60 days. And then the first 60 days of just talking with Trev and really being on the same page with him and knowing how important it was to go after in-state kids. They bring in 3,000 kids to camps.
Yeah.
And I mean, think about that with the camps right there. I mean, that's a big deal.
That's a huge deal. And, you know, just after watching him work these last 8 months, you get the idea that this guy doesn't leave a lot of stones unturned. So if he had this time to actually be looking at recruits and looking at programs, it was a calculated decision to come to Nebraska. But he mentioned something in one of the breakout sessions. I don't think we have video for that. No big deal. I didn't contribute. It's not Honky's fault. But he talked about running the camps. He said June was hard. June was really hard. If y'all remember, we had a bunch of recruits throughout the month committed at the month, and they had official visits and camps and then official visits and this and that. But he made a point to say that his coaches and himself work those camps. They make sure they're present. They want to evaluate. They want to see the guys. It's not the Nebraska camp. Here are all our grad assistants running it. Yeah. The coaches are out there actively looking for talent, which again, whoever knows any like high school talent throughout Nebraska, whoever listens to our podcast, let them know. Like, to get in front of these coaches' eyes, they're looking for you. And to me, that's awesome. Like, because, you know, everybody knows about the Metro. And, you know, you get the stragglers out west, but there's probably other guys out there.
Well, we've had Glenn Snodgrass on. I mean, he'd say the exact same thing. Yeah. In fact, we need to get him on in the next couple of weeks.
100%.
Especially if he can get into a practice there, it'd be kind of cool to get his updated thoughts. But exactly. He said that. Get out in front of these coaches. Yeah. They want to talk with you.
It's not a big stretch. Listen, all we grow right now in Nebraska seems to be tight ends. But it isn't much of a stretch to add a few pounds on that tight end, make him a D end.
Well,
and just get him out there.
Actually think of what we've done in state. When you talk about in-state talent, we've now had two straight years where we've had a quarterback make it to the Elite 11. And then this year with Kalen actually make the Elite 11, since they bring in like 22 guys and you have to make the top 10.
Well, he's almost made it. Not even that big of news. It's kind of crazy.
We've had quarterbacks go. Look at the receivers that we've now have been coming out, especially down there at Bellevue West. We're going to have three guys from Bellevue West alone that are receivers. I mean, these are position groups are not traditionally what you consider the in-state guys. You know, Jalen Lloyd a year ago from Westside, you know, speedster guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're skill position guys in addition to the fullbacks, in addition to the tight ends, in addition to the offense and defense alignment. I mean, we've got some real players in this state that can play position. Actually, if there's one spot that I'd like to see us go back to a little bit is running back. You know, back in the day when we had the Omaha Central connection, boy, what I wouldn't give to see one or two of those guys.
I think the running back position is just so much lost its shine that these young players don't think of it as
I know where you're going with this. How about this? Flip it. Remember how, you know, high schools follow what Nebraska does, in-state high schools do. Uh-huh. And so when we went to the spread or when we went to West Coast offense and under Callahan, that trickles its way down to the high schools. If this coaching staff is going to get under center, we're going to have I formations, we're going to have I backs, not just running backs, I backs, essentially. Does that start to trickle back down into high schools to where maybe that position, because you're absolutely right. We've kind of lost that running back here because it's kind of been lost.
Right.
You know,
maybe some of the wide receivers we had could have been running backs. I love your brain. I love how it works. I was going to bring up the same thing. That people may not realize, especially younger people that listen to our show, and I'm sure there's many of you. when Nebraska was clicking in the 90s, the offense they were running permeated throughout the state, which created kind of a pipeline of itself into the state. The key to that, though, is the program kind of needs to be winning. You know, it helps if they're winning. And if what you're talking about does – transgress and we do start winning, you will start seeing these teams and throughout the Nebraska, you know Western Nebraska and even some of the metro schools, I guarantee, start running more of that style because these coaches also want to get their players to Nebraska. You know, it's a big feather in their cap too, so you want to feed that cycle, and I would love that so much because the style of football, whatever, but it's the winning too. It's the relevance. These young kids, it's, you know, right, wrong, indifferent. Social media is what moves their needle. And Nebraska does have a strong social media presence, but we don't have a lot of winning presence right now. And that's what I think they're looking at.
We've got to win. We had a comment earlier from Shuck, and it said, did the other Redcasters buy Honky breakfast or no? And that's a playoff of, if you've been on Twitter and social media the last few days, there was just a little bit of, you know, Twitter controversy about a breakfast snafu of between volleyball and football.
Oh, yeah,
the point is, you said earlier, you talked about how Coach Rhule is involved. Mm-hmm. He gets involved in everything, whether it's a camp. Well, he has played things so well. He got involved on social media and totally diffused a situation that didn't need to be a situation to begin with, but he's just so good about it. And he got out there and he took a photo with the volleyball team and you know what? It's handling situations and not letting things become, as we've said in the past, shit shows.
Yeah.
And that's a Coach Rhule thing. And it's also absolutely a Trev thing. Trev is a communications guy.
For sure.
His background with ESPN, everything doesn't hurt with this. We're going to own the message. We're not going to let the message get away from us. And when something does get away from us, we're going to fix it and we're going to move on.
Was it Lauren Stebbins that kind of ignited it with her initial tweet?
It was just a tweet that she had sent out there. And
what I liked about it, though, is the fact that she, when Rhule did his whole what's the deal kind of thing, she immediately retweeted and said something cool.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was just like, oh, misunderstanding. Oh, I apologize. I ain't trying to ruffle any feathers. Like, I really appreciated her coming back out there and doing something cool about that. Because some people could get butt hurt about that and say, no, I think this is whatever. I really appreciated the maturity that the all parties showed, like made a joke out of it, made it a big nothing, because it is a big nothing.
It is a big
nothing. But in this day and age that we live in, a big nothing can sometimes be the biggest story out there.
Yeah.
You know, thank God for Big Ten media days. There was no chance.
I've long said it, you know, one of the most under the 5 years of kind of moose slash frost, one of the most embarrassing
frosty moose.
One of the more embarrassing days was that, what I call Black Friday, that happened in March of the off season. And that was when the whole Oklahoma thing came out and, you know, we're not going to play against Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And we went hours and hours and hours, and in social media world, that's days and weeks mm-hmm. of time, but it was really just a couple hours, but we don't have an answer. Yeah. And we totally came off looking, we didn't own the message. We didn't own the narrative.
Nope.
And we came off, even though I don't think anything was going to happen, we came off small.
So small.
And Trev.
I'll never get over Trev, Macho Grande.
Trev and Rhule, they're not going to let that kind of stuff happen. And if something does happen, we're going to get it fixed. We're going to move on. That's what I like about it. That is a
worthwhile YouTube search to watch Trev do damage control in that press conference after the whole debacle. That was so embarrassing. That was so embarrassing. That's the kind of stuff that Nebraska fans make fun of other fan bases for. And it happened to us. And that was a hard pill to swallow. And I felt like I really, really like Husker Nation. I really love our fans. I really love how much they support the team. I'm really proud of how our team, or how our fans in the state and throughout the country, support this team. And that move made us look like such punks. And like, that's the one thing, like, Husker fans, like, oh, we're not very good, but we're not punks. You know, we'll play anybody. You know, we're going to lose, but we're not, and it looked like we turned tail. And that was the biggest betrayal of that administration, and it was that move.
And we're talking about just a couple of hours where we didn't respond to something. At the end of the day, we're still talking about years later.
I'm talking about if the finagling behind the scenes about trying to get out of that game was true,
but
that it was.
Yeah, that's bad.
There's no coming back for me on that one.
All right, well,
I'd rather lose the game in fantastic fashion than try to back out of it, which we've done. It's not even that. I've already done that, you know? We went to that game.
Ryan says, do you see parallels between what Wisconsin is doing to Nebraska going West Coast in 04? Seems like Rhule could be getting us back to what Solich was building before he was fired, and Wisconsin is making the mistake Nebraska made in 03. I started down that path a little bit earlier in the show saying that exact same thing, and I do. Now, it might work great for Wisconsin, and I know they're ecstatic to get Fickell and everything, but they had a coach that was winning at a 70% clip. They had an offensive style that was something that the state really rallied around, that they could recruit around, and they're flipping a coin. It might work for them, and it might work, and they might have great success. Or they may go 3-and-out real quick a bunch of times and put their defense back in some bad spots, and all of a sudden you've flipped an entire thing. I'll make one other correlation to the Callahan to or sold to Callahan. I saw a little bit of that when Lloyd Carr went to Rodriguez at Michigan. Mm-hmm. And right away, I'm like, nope, nope, this is, you're flipping everything. And we'll see. I'm not 100%. I need to watch a little more Fickell. I don't know how much he's flipping everything there and turning over every single chair, but that's what happened at Nebraska.
On paper, it looks like he is. This is my own little personal.
That's what happened at Nebraska in 04. They flipped everything.
This is my own little personal pet theory about what Wisconsin's doing. I totally get the move. I totally understand with the way the conference is changing and them feeling like we've got to, you know, grab the horse by the reins and try to make a move to get to the next echelon, because what we've been doing, though successful, isn't getting us over that hump. I get that. It's dangerous when you throw it all away. That's a big one. But here's the other thing. What if you're successful? What if you're good? What if Wisconsin comes out and actually does pretty good? Maybe they don't win the title, but because they lose to Michigan, and Michigan beat Ohio State, you know, for the third or fourth time, and then Ohio State fires May, and then who do you think they're going to go after if Wisconsin's had a couple good years? Sorry about dropping one. No. If, you know, they're going to go after Luke Fickell, a guy who's been there before, and then they're going to steal your guy, and then you're going to be left with a program doing something they're not exactly traditionally known for. And they're going to have to go back and find a guy, with Barry Alvarez being gone, by the way. That's a big part of this. And then you're going to go back and try to re-spark that magic. I'm telling you, as a Husker fan, boys and girls, you're playing with fire. I can't even say I'm hoping it doesn't happen, because I don't care about
it. I love chaos with the other team.
I feel like Wisconsin's been poisoned. So I'm just hoping I'm right.
Yeah. In the last season of the Big Ten West, I want all the other teams.
And what if they're bad?
I want the other teams to have so much chaos. And
what if they're bad, Matt? What if they find out that they can't recruit to this style, which is why, in the first place, they were recruiting the bigger style, because they could always recruit to that style and be competitive. And now you got to have an elite quarterback. And now you have to have a couple elite running or wide receivers. And, you know, like, it just changes everything. It changes your recruiting footprint, which I've always heard Wisconsin's great for big, stumpy linemen that maybe aren't very good at zone read. I'm just saying.
You ask good questions.
So the parallel is huge. I think the parallel is huge, except for the fact that Wisconsin never put trophies in their time.
Well, Wisconsin likes to copy Nebraska. Let's hope that this move
didn't quite get there.
Let's hope that this move, they copy Nebraska of the last 20 years and start to have a downfall there. Let's end here talking about one of the last things that Trev was
just warming up.
Trev was asked about the facilities. So obviously we're starting practice here at the beginning of next week. Fall camp starts what is being done right now with the Go Big project? Where are we at? Trev answered some of those questions.
I had to remind myself, we have 315,000 square feet. I mean, it's a massive facility. So, you know, one of the things we're really trying to figure out, and Coach Rule is really passionate about, is we don't want to do anything that disrupts the football team. The rest of the stuff, as I talked about earlier, maybe the training table and some of that's probably more at the end of the calendar year. You know, obviously being the first year and everything, we don't need anything to disrupt the team. So we also have great facilities where we currently reside, right? So
would you get the locker room then and the weight room before the season?
Well, obviously the locker room for sure. The weight room, the weight room, I'm not exactly sure.
So let's be clear, and we've said this the last few shows that we've had Tyler Kai on, Associate Athletic Director. We've talked about this all offseason. The team will be in the locker room by fall camp, by the season. What all moves in there, and that might change throughout the course of the year. Right. At the beginning of the season, they may be lifting weights in the current locker or weight room. By the end of the season, they may be lifting weights in the new one. So things are going to be moving and happening during it. But they've got the two grass fields down now, and that was something here that Trev talked about, was the grass fields and how Coach Rule is wanting that for health purposes with the team. But they've got the grass fields down. You know, that facility, it is amazing, and it is huge. It is a huge facility, but they should be at least the locker room in there. And also, I guess what should go along with that is everything I've heard is that the tunnel walk, when we come out against Northern Illinois, you know, in week three, that our first home game, we should be coming out of the northeast corner.
Okay.
And we should have a new tunnel walk there. So unless I'm wrong there, I mean, that's what I've heard that's going to be happening. So,
well, that wouldn't be very hard to accomplish in a short amount of time, I imagine. It's a tunnel operator. That's a massive project. And I'm sure I've heard like just getting materials has been a bit of an issue. I'm sure they're going as hard as they can to get it done, but it's just real world problems.
Yeah,
I kind of the moving in chunks to me is a little anticlimactic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In my mind, I was sort of like, open the door and it's all done. It's almost to me like, except for how it would bone your seniors, it's like, let's just skip till next year. Let's just ride it out this year, and the next year just unveil it.
It also speaks to how much stuff is going on in there. From you're moving everything into a training tables and study areas. Also, fan amenities. That whole entire front area is going to be all fan-facing, Hall of Fame kind of, you know, really cool stuff.
And yeah, let's make sure he's got some good e-bike parking, because me and Sully are camping. But yeah, it's I'm sure Trev's frustrated with it, and I'm sure they're doing absolutely the best they can. It's a bummer that they couldn't do it, you know, more seamlessly. But it's okay. Where does it rank on your concerns list for going into next year?
Not really. We've gotten a lot of questions.
No. I know.
And so that's why.
I understand the questions. To me, it's like whatever.
Well, as Trev said, we have pretty good facilities existing, which is kind of weird because, you know, why are you building the new one? You're building a new one because you want the best.
Yeah.
But they have good facilities. They're going to be in a good facility, whether they're in the old one or the new one. So
yeah, there's no falling. Yeah. They're fine. And it'd be nice maybe to send out the old facilities with like a really good team. That'd be cool.
That would be
kind of fresh.
Our old facilities from 2006.
I know. It's crazy how fast that goes.
Well, speaking of how fast things go, Mac, we're at parting shots time already. Boy, that hour just flew by. Redcasters, thank you so much for following along, for asking questions.
I could really keep going. We didn't even talk about Jeff Sims being 230. But anyway, no, it's fine.
Well, here's your parting shot. Say whatever you want. Talk. What did we not hit on included in your parting shot?
Let me gather. You want to do one, and I can kind of gather my final.
Sure. Gather your one. So I have a quick one. It's kind of a sentimental one, but we've been off about the last month. Now, obviously, anyone that's been following along with me on social media, for us this month, I lost my father a couple weeks ago. Very tough time there. But we had a memorial that Redcast Rob put together, which was really cool. It was touching. I didn't know he was doing it. Producer Skip came up with the idea. And I mean, I think 30 or some people have donated to it over, I think up to $1,700 or so has been added to it. And they're going to have Dad's name put on the wall of donors on the north side of the stadium, which is just an awesome tribute to him. So I really appreciate everything. But even more than just that, I appreciate all the support and the kind words and everything that the Redcasters have said. It means a lot to my family. My family is blown away by the generosity of people there. And so thank you so much to everyone there. And it's good to be back behind the mic here.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a nice turnout. It was a good celebration of life, and that's always what you want in the end anyway. Awkward sidestep back to football.
back to football, Mac. But you asked me to go first.
What a colossal screw up. Anyway,
live podcasting.
Well, I'm just going to take a step back from that and say, because I was there. I was honored to be one of the pallbearers at the funeral, and it was a great turnout. And
wore red.
Everyone wore like a Husker something or other. I wore a Redcast shirt because, you know, this is his boy right here. And speaking to that, you know, you look around and you wonder what a legacy is for a person. And really the best way to measure it is the family of the man, you know. And I look at you and your sisters and your kid and their kids, and what a great young family. They've all grown out to be, all from the union of you and your mom and your dad. And I just thought, you always think in these moments, like, how do you honor him? How do you respect him? He's gone, so what's it all mean? And I thought you did just a beautiful job. You stepped up to the plate for your family, and you absolutely handled him like a man. So, like, Mike Honke, well, he raised my best friend. He raised my best friend, and one of the absolute most fantastic Husker fans out there. I know he was super proud of you. If we have any kind of good season this year, But then he hopes, you guarantee Mike Honke's pulling strings up there. So
up there, man.
I got high hopes for this season. I really do. Because I think we got a little
and we're
bracing the hole.
We're drinking a little brandy from Mike Honke.
And Mike, hey, thank you for the scotch and the pickup truck and the workbench and the soaker hoses. You know, God bless you. He was a bit of a hoarder, but damn, he had good taste.
Organized hoarder, and he had good equipment. So
yeah.
Really appreciate that.
Yeah,
you got it. Football wise, was there anything we missed? You said Jeff Sims, 230 pounds.
Jeff Sims, 230 pounds. Wants to get down to 225, but geez, man, you're talking about a frame. He's so not talked about. It's fantastic. The guy's got all the staff. You can literally see themselves holding themselves back, and it'll be very disappointing if they're wrong. Very, very disappointing.
Very disappointing. All right. Well. I don't know. We need to not wait another month now, but that was the off season. It's kind of the end of the off season now. So again,
turn the page
again on Tuesday night, on August 1st here. Let me get back up to this. We're going to have Tommy Frazier on. Just one more reminder, special guest, Tommy Frazier, the GOAT.
Touchdown, Tommy.
And, so we'll do that 7 PM Tuesday, August 1st. So be following along for that, Redcasters. Outside of that, next time we talk to you, we're going to be practicing. It's going to be fall camp. It's going to be Husker football.
Cashing checks and breaking necks. All right.
All right. That's another Go Big Redcast.
A Herd at Sports Network production.